Chapter 35. Anna. Bull wasn't in his office when she arrived. A muscular young woman with a large gun on her hip shrugged when Anna asked if she could wait for him, then ignored her and continued working. A wall screen was set to the radio-free slow zone feed, where a young Earther man was leaning in toward Monica Stewart and speaking earnestly. His skin was a bright pink that didn't seem to be his natural color. Anna thought he looked peeled. "I haven't changed my commitment to autonomy for the Brazilian shared interest zones," he said. "If anything, I feel like I've broadened it." "Broadened it how?" Monica asked. She seemed genuinely interested. It was a gift. The peeled man tapped at the air with his fingertips. Anna felt sure she'd seen him on the Thomas Prince, but she couldn't for the life of her remember his name. She had the vague sense he was a painter. Some kind of artist, certainly. "We've all changed," he said, "by coming here. By going through the trials that we're all going through. We've all been changed. When we go back, none of us will be the people we were before. The tragedy and the loss and the sense of wonder changes what it means to be human. Do you know what I mean?" Oddly, Anna thought she did. Being a minister meant being in the middle of people's lives. Anna had counseled dating congregation members, presided over their weddings, baptized their babies, and in one heartbreaking case, presided over the infant's funeral a year later. Members of the congregation included her in most of the important events of their lives. She was used to it, and mostly enjoyed the deep connection to people it brought. Charting the course of a life was making a map of the ways each event changed the person, leaving someone different on the other side. Passing through the ring and the tragedies it had brought wouldn't leave any of them the same. The exodus from the rest of the fleet to the behemoth was in full swing. The tent city spread across the curved inner surface of the habitation drum like wildflowers on a field of flat ceramic steel-colored earth. Anna saw tall, gangly belters helping offload wounded earthers from emergency carts, plugging in IVs and other medical equipment, fluffing pillows and mopping brows. Inners and outers offloaded crates in mixed groups without comment. Anna couldn't help but be warmed by that, even in the face of their recent disaster. Maybe it took real tragedy to get them all working together. But it did. They did. There was hope in that. Now, if they could just figure out how to do it without the blood and screaming. "Your work has been criticized," Monica Stewart said, "as advocating violence." The peeled man nodded. "I used to reject that," he said. "I've come to the conclusion that it may be valid, though. I think when we come home, there will be some readjustment."
"Because of the ring?"
"And the slow zone. And what's happened here.
Do you think you would encourage other political artists to come out here?"
"Absolutely."
Chris, her young officer, had asked about organizing mixed group church services on the behemoth. She'd assumed he meant mixed religions at first, but it turned out he meant a church group with earthers and Martians and belters. Mixed, as if God categorized people based on the gravity they'd grown up in. It had occurred to Anna, then, that there really wasn't any such thing as a mixed church group. No matter what they looked like, or what they chose to call him, when a group of people called out to God together, they were one. Even if there was no God, or one God, or many gods, it didn't matter. Faith, hope, and love, Paul had written. But the greatest of these is love. Faith and hope were very important to Anna. But she could see Paul's point in a way she hadn't before. Love didn't need anything else. It didn't need a common belief or a common identity. Anna thought of her child and felt a rush of longing and loneliness. She could almost feel Nami in her arms, almost smell the intoxicating new baby scent on her head. Nono, the Ugandan, and Anna, the Russian, had blended themselves together and made Nami. Not a mix, nothing so crude as that. More than just the sum of her parts and origins. A new thing,
individual and unique. No mixed group, then. Just a group. A new thing. Perfect and unique. She couldn't imagine God would see it any other way. Anna was pretty sure she had her first sermon, too. She was about halfway through typing up an outline for her No Mixed Groups in God's Eyes sermon on her handset when Bull came through the door, his mechanical legs whining and thumping with each step. Anna thought it gave Bull even more gravitas than he'd had before. He moved with a deliberateness caused by mechanical necessity, but easily mistaken for formality and stateliness. The electric whine of the machine and the heavy thump of his tread were a sort of herald calling out his arrival. Anna imagined the annoyance Bull would feel if she told him this and giggled a little to herself. Bull was in the middle of speaking to a subordinate and didn't even notice her. "I don't care how they feel about it, Serge. The agreement was no armed military personnel on the ship. Even if there weren't a shitload of guns built in, those suits would still be weapons. Confiscate their gear or throw them off the damn ship." "Si, jefe," the other man with him replied. "Take it how, Sasa? Can opener?" "Charm the bastards. If we can't make them do anything now while we're all friends, what do we do when they decide we aren't friends? Four Marines in recon armor decide they own this ship, they fucking own it. So we take the armor away before they do. I don't even want that stuff in the drum. Lock it in the bridge armory."
Serge looked deeply unhappy at this task. "Some help, maybe?"
"Take as many as you want, but if you don't need them, it's only going to piss the Marines off, and if you do, they won't actually help."
Serge paused, mouth open, then closed it with a snap and left. Bull noticed Anna for the first time and said,
"What can I do for you, preacher?"
"Anna, please. I came to talk about Clarissa Mao," she said.
"If you're not her lawyer or her union representative,
I'm her priest. What happens to her now?" Bull sighed again.
"She confessed to blowing up a ship. Nothing much good comes after that."
"People say you spaced a man for selling drugs. They say you're hard, cold."
"Do they?" Bull said.
Anna couldn't tell if the surprise in his voice was genuine or mocking. "Please don't kill her," she said, leaning closer and looking him in the eye. "Don't you let anyone else kill her either."
"Why not?"
The way he said it wasn't a challenge or a threat. It was as if he just didn't know that answer, and sort of wondered. Anna swallowed her dread. "I can't help her if she's dead."
"No offense, but that's not really my concern."
"I thought you were the law and order here."
"I'm aiming for order, mostly."
"She deserves a trial. And if everyone knows what you know about her, she won't get one. They'll riot. They'll kill her. At least help me get her a trial."
The large man sighed. "So, are you looking for a trial or just a way to stall for time?"
"Stall for time," Anna said. Bull nodded, weighing something in his mind, then gestured for her to precede him into his office. After she sat down next to his battered desk, he clumped around the small space, making a pot of coffee. It seemed an extravagance, considering the newly implemented water rationing, but then Anna remembered Bull was now the second most powerful person in the slow zone. The privileges of rank. She didn't want coffee, but accepted the offered cup to allow Bull a moment of generosity. Generosity now might lead to more later, when she was asking for something she really wanted.
"When Holden starts telling people who actually sabotage the Sung-un, and he's Jim Holden, so he will, the UN people are going to ask for Clarissa. And if they give me enough that I can get everyone here together and safe until we can get out of this trap, I'm going to give her to them. Not off the ship, but in here."
"What will they do?" Anna took a companionable sip of her coffee. It burned her tongue and tasted like acid.
"Probably they'll put together a tribunal of flag officers, have a short trial, and throw her in a recycler. I'd say space her, normally, but that seems wasteful considering our predicament. Supplies sent from home will take as long to fly through the slow zone to us as they'll take to get to the ring. His voice was flat, emotionless. He was discussing logistics, not a young woman's life. Anna suppressed a shudder and said, "Mr. Baca, do you believe in God?" To his credit, he tried not to roll his eyes. He almost succeeded. "I believe in whatever gets you through the night." "Don't be flip," Anna said, and was gratified when Bull straightened a little in his walker. In her experience, most strong-willed men had equally strong-willed mothers, and she knew how to hit some of the same buttons. "Look," Bull said, trying to reclaim the initiative. Anna spoke over the top of him. "Forget God for a moment," she said. "Do you believe in the concept of forgiveness, in the possibility of redemption, in the value of every human life, no matter how tainted or corrupted?" "Fuck no," Bull said. "I think it's entirely possible to go so far into the red you can't ever balance the books."
"Sounds like the voice of experience. How far have you been?"
"Far enough to know there's a too damn far."
"And you're comfortable being the judge of where that line is?"
Bull pulled on the frame of his walker, shifting his weight in the straps that held him. He looked wistfully at the office chair he could no longer use. Anna felt bad for him, broken at the worst possible time, trying to keep his tiny world in order and burning through the last reserves of his strength with reckless abandon. The bruised eyes and yellow skin suddenly seemed like a flashing battery indicator, warning that the power was almost gone. Anna felt a pang of guilt for adding to his burden. "I don't want to kill that girl," he said, taking another sip of the terrible coffee. "In fact, I don't give a shit about her one way or the other, as long as she's locked up and isn't a danger to my ship. The one you should talk to is Holden. He's the one who's going to get the torches and pitchforks crowd wound up. But the Martians surrendered 20 hours ago." Anna blinked. "They've been wanting to for days," Bull said. "We just had to find a way to let them save face."
"Save face?"
"They got a story they can tell where they don't look weak. That's all they needed. But if we didn't find something, they'd have stuck to their posts until they all died. Nothing ever killed more people than being afraid to look like a sissy."
"Holden's coming here, then?"
"Already be on a shuttle escorted by 4 recon marines, which is another fucking headache for me. But how about this? I won't talk about the girl until I have reason to. What Holden does, though, he just does."
"Fine. Then I'll talk to him when he arrives," Anna said.
"Good luck with that," Bull said.